Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Welcome to the Lore of Us podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to the fungal apocalypse. This is our coverage of The Last of Us on HBO, Season 2, Episode 4, Day 1.
Let's start with our hot takes today, and then we'll get into a discussion of the episode, a little bit thematic-based. Don't forget, you can contact us at TLOU@thelorehounds.com, or you can go to our Discord to chat more about the show with us. But if you want your feedback in the show, definitely email us. We are not taking Discord feedback for the show.
Right. And if you like what we are up to at the Lorehounds and all the things we were just talking about on mic before, about all the insanity that we have going on from Doctor Who to Andor and wrapping up with Wheel of Time and trying to get some one-shots in for some movies. I just found out today that it's the 50th anniversary for the Holy Grail. And I'm like, oh, crap. We've got to organize for that one. Anyway, we have a subscription service either on Patreon or on Supercast. There are links in the show notes below. Also in the show notes, there is a link tree that has a link to all of the other affiliate podcasts that we all play in the same sandbox, so to speak. I don't know. Can we say that? I don't know. The people that we would be running with if we were in the middle of a fungal apocalypse.
It's true. It's true. We'd have our own little Jackson.
That's right. Our own little Seattle. Would we have scar? Would we take ritual scarification? Would we require our affiliates to scar themselves ritually?
I'm going to say no. Okay. Not for me. You're on your own on the fungal apocalypse if you're doing that.
All right.
So just, you know, Last of Us history. I've played the games. You haven't. I will say, though, watching this episode, I was like, oh, I haven't played the second game nearly as much as I played the first game. So, like, some of the game stuff might be a little hazy for me, and I'm not going to, like, offer stuff up unless I'm sure about it. So if I have a little bit less input from the games in this episode, then that's why. Right. Just, you know, write in if you're a game player and you want to talk about the differences between the show and the game. I think it's really interesting. There are certain things that I want to talk about in this episode about adaptation choices, but... Mm-hmm. Before that, let's go into our hot takes. David, what's yours?
Well, I was going to say, before we get there too, as a game player, I'm just curious, are you feeling like they've got this going? Because I can't tell any game stuff at all. Like, I don't see any outlines of any kind of game mechanics or plot. Just like season one. It seems seamless to me.
I mean, they did the same thing that they do in the game with, like, we're in Seattle, day one. Like, that's the next phase of this game. We've got Seattle day one.
But nothing seems video gamey to me. You know what I mean? Never feel like I'm in a video game or they've adapted something from the video game. The story is unfolding like I would expect the story to unfold with these characters in this situation.
I think, first of all, The Last of Us 1 was pretty cinematic. But by the time they got to The Last of Us 2, which was in 2020, so this is pretty recent.
Yeah, that is pretty recent, yeah.
They already knew that they were known for making cinematic video games, and so they're leaning into that more.
Okay.
And so I think that part of it is just that, like, they knew what they were making at this point.
Right.
They knew that they were doing something that could be very easily adapted.
Got it.
And, you know, they are changing certain things, like, all right, so I'll just go right into my adaptation.
Yeah, yeah, why don't you go for it? Yeah, please.
Because, you know... A lot of this backstory that we're getting with people like Isaac, mm-hmm. these are things that you learn through, like, notes that you pick up.
Mm.
So, like, you'll pick up a note where people are like, it was crazy when Isaac joined the the WLF and you know, he betrayed all his Fedra people. I don't even think that was the exact backstory of the game. But the point is, you get all these through like interactive storytelling in the game. And so they always have to be making choices of like, what do we just let by the bygone? Because those are all optional, right? Like, I don't have to pick up all those bits of lore. If I want to just walk right by zombies,
yeah,
then I can do that.
Right.
But and just like the guitar scene with Ellie, that's an optional cutscene in the game. You can go upstairs in the record shop and you can pick up the guitar and play for Dina. You don't have to. You can just play right through that and never touch the guitar.
Mm.
So they just liked it. So they left it in for the TV show. But my point is, they're doing some really smart things with adaptation. There is a main structure pillar of this game, of this story, in the way that they tell it, that has not been revealed yet in the show.
Okay.
That I am very curious onto how they're going to approach that in terms of adaptation. And I think I understand what they're doing now.
Are you trying to feel out the plot and the movements of the storyline to see if you can see where it's coming?
Well, they already are moving up a lot of exposition about Abby, about the WLF, but they're, and about the Scars too, the Seraphites. And I do think that they're making smart choices, but I'm wondering, the way that the game is structured is really weird. It's really, really weird from a gameplay, from like a video game standpoint. Huh,
okay.
And in a show, I think it's even weirder. And I can't talk about why yet. So I'm curious how they go forward with this game. I will say some of the dialogue in this was really clunky. Like the Ellie and Dina could professing love to each other. Very clunky teenage dialogue. I did not love that. Very different from the game too. So I think that something that I'm going to criticize this episode for, which I think most of my comments are going to be praising this episode, but something I want to criticize this episode for is, in the game at this point, you really feel the rage Ellie has. You really feel that she is just single-mindedly focused on vengeance.
Okay.
That there is, you know, Dina's there. She really likes Dina. And yes, they are going to be an item, but it's not her primary thing, right? Like, the main thing is, I want to get Abby. I want to get Abby. I want to get Abby. And I'm not feeling that from this episode. I feel like Abby was almost, like, getting to Abby was almost the side quest. On this episode, whereas most of it was about Ellie and Dina. And, you know, that's a choice. I don't know if it was a good one. I think time will tell. I think it really depends on what happens next episode and the rest of the season.
Gotcha.
Because I need to see that vengeful, angry, hateful Ellie.
And we saw her waver at the end here. Like, you don't have to, you know, she didn't have white hot, I'm gone.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Lake Hill building. I'm gone. I'm already, like, there's no conversation. I'm already out the door. I'm on Sparkle. I'm running towards it.
Right.
No, there was like this conversation and like, oh, well, maybe we should think about this. And that's not white hot rage.
No, it's not. It's not. And I mean, look, they did do a good job of showing how like Ellie is, you know, like, oh, let's go to that building right now. And Dina goes, and why can we not? I did enjoy. Dora the Explorer has got a lot of good stealth skills. As we know, swiper, no swiping. She's got to get away from him all the time. So anyway, point is, I do think that first of all, Isabel Merced, she is doing an amazing job as Dina, a standout performance of this whole season. No complaints there. I do think that the writing was just a little bit clunky in the dialogue at some points. That being said, I think the visuals were amazing. I don't know if you know this, but they use real people in that grotesque display.
Oh, really?
Those were real people hanging.
Oh, God. Okay.
And they had the guts coming out of them and everything.
Right. Yeah. Prosthetic things and stuff.
But those were real people hanging. They were like, we're not using dummies. We're hanging up real people.
Okay. That's cool.
I think that the practical effects are off the charts in the show. You know, the way the zombies look pounding on the on the subway. I was genuinely like really nervous for Ellie and Dina. And part of that is like, you know, that this was a similar scene in the show. Man, I am just going right for it, aren't I? This is it's a very similar scene in the game, but because you don't have that gameplay aspect of like sneaking around and trying to like, you throw a bottle over there to distract the clickers, you really have to like get that intensity in a different way. And they're doing it in a really smart way.
Cool.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was really mixed on this episode. There were a lot of stuff that was really tense, and I really enjoyed the build up and the action and then the resolution. And then there's some stuff that it was like a lot of little things that really kept adding up, and then taking, and then by the end of it, all of these little things had added up, and I was just kind of not feeling it. And we talk about this a lot on Lorehounds, is if you are watching a show and you start, you know, you're looking at your phone, or you're starting to nitpick at the production details and things like that. You can notice a production detail, but when you start obsessing about all of them, that's when you know that you're sort of sliding out of the, what's the word we're looking for? The
verisimilitude.
Yes, the verisimilitude. If I can say that 10 times fast, you know, that I was slipping out. So last night I was definitely at the end like, and it was just little stuff. The Seattle stuff. I'm from Seattle, so I'm seeing stuff that's just, you know, not right. I'm seeing some stuff that is right, and then other stuff. And then they're like all the rainbow flags on Capitol Hill. Okay, great. Expect to see that. The little archway thing, not a Seattle thing. The subway station.
I actually wanted to ask you about the pride flags, because I had this debate with my wife last night. I was like, 2003, were there pride flags up in Seattle? And she's like, Seattle? I think so. And I was like, I don't know. 2003 feels early for that much open support.
Oh, Capitol Hill has long been open and out.
Okay.
And flags flying and bars and people out on the streets and all kinds of stuff. It was Capitol Hill and Wallingford were the two areas. But Capitol Hill was a big LGBTQ area. We have Seattle Central Community College up there. And so that had a big draw. We had a lot of bars and restaurants, clubs. Specialty shops, if you will. it was a full on, that's where it was happening in Seattle. Okay. So 2003, I mean, definitely.
I understood the symbolism they were going for, which was, you know, two women who love women passing a pride flag and not knowing what it is, just being like these weird really proud rainbow people.
Yeah. It was hilarious. I mean,
fascinating, right? Like what do the symbols mean when you take them out of their context?
Exactly. It was a very good line and a great way to play that. Anyway, there's a little archway that says Capitol Hill. There's nothing. That kind of stuff. And then I noticed, this is totally nitpicky, and I'm just going to, once I get past my little things, we'll move on. But when she opens the tank top, right, I could tell that it was just a thin sheet of metal. A tank hatch is like a ginormous piece of machinery that is like thick, and it has viewports on all this kind of stuff. And I get it, right? It's a cardboard tank. I mean, a plywood tank, and they've got to, you know, do stuff with it. But it kept being those little tiny things that were adding up. There is no, whatever the TV station is, there's no building that looks like that. There's no TV station with those names. So all that little stuff kept bugging me, and part of that's a me thing, but it was just a lot of incongruous details.
Yeah, and for that, you also have to ask yourself, like, how much are they legally allowed to use in the branding? And how much are they going to have to like make up the TV station because they can't get the rights to use it, right?
Sure. But then make a building that looked like that. There's no building that looks like that in Seattle. Like it's a completely ridiculous building. So it just little things like that were starting to add up. And then there were, I agree that there are some beautiful set shots in here with the guitar and all of that. But then at the very end, they're just sort of standing there looking out at the big battle going on. And they're they're just kind of standing there, and they're just kind of talking. And I don't know, the whole energy of the whole episode just got lost onto me there when they were at the forward bay, the WLF base with all the people hanging, and the subway scene. And even though we don't have subways like that in Seattle, like those are completely not the kinds of subways.
Yeah, you just got to accept certain.
I know. Like,
look, it's not real Seattle, right? This is
fair enough.
We needed a subway scene, and we put a subway there.
But the tension of all of that stuff was great. And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Are they going to make it through the hatch? Like, so I was really invested. And then there was just some other wooden dialogue and stiffness that I was like, oh, this. Just kind of a miss, and it was upsetting because otherwise it was a really great episode, and I'm like, okay, finally their relationship is just starting to come into being in this new, or hit this new transition point right when the stakes get very high, when we learn about the Seraphims are not nice people, like they set us up at the beginning. The Seraphites, thank you, Seraphims. So the Seraphites we thought, oh, well, they're just peaceful forest dwellers.
Who I know. Are I had to keep my mouth shut on that one because I'm thinking, like, these guys are fucking vicious. Right. You don't know that yet.
And they completely play off that. They play that off. So mm-hmm. that was set up really well. And then we see the kinds of things that we're going to do, what they're doing. And we're like, oh, God, why are the wolves killing them? So anyway, we can get more into the episode. So because we're digging into a lot of the details. So I really was mixed on the episode overall, so much that I really enjoyed. And then there's just a few things that
yeah.
kind of were kind of like kind of bland. I guess not bad. They were just bland, you know, yeah. like I had a great starter, a great salad, you know, great amuse-bouche, whatever. And then the main course was just a little bit. Nah.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I think I'm in a similar place to you. I think, you know, good, not great episode.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they work on the dialogue a little bit for the next episode. And again, I really need to see Ellie develop into this, like,
yes, agreed. Being. I think maybe that's something that was missing for me, too, because if you're going to stick with this revenge mission, show me you're out for blood.
Yeah, I just felt like...
And she was not.
Yeah, she's kind of just, like, wandering in the city, like, oh, maybe if I come across Abby, I'll punch her in the face. But right. like,
I'll play
like someone who's like out for blood.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll play some guitar and hang out, eat some beef jerky. So I do have a question for the listeners. So if anybody knows, I'm pretty sure I know what Dina's gun is. And I'm just wondering, like, this is kind of a slight prediction or kind of a slight, what do you think? Do you think she has it chambered as a 9 or as a 40? That's my question for the listeners. But I'm all pretty right. sure it's a Browning high power, so.
Right in. Your prize is nothing.
Your prize is internet points. But yep. Dina's a bad... I really like Dina as a character. Mm-hmm. I like her sort of pedantic, like, now why can't we do that? Now why do you think that is? And, you know, it's really funny. Cool.
But I appreciate that Ellie is, like, going with it too, right? She's mm-hmm. just like, all right, you're right. You're right. Let's do it right.
Yeah.
Let's exactly. not die doing this. It's fair. All right. Well, we've talked about most of the scenes now just in our hot takes. So why don't we go into it?
Sounds
good. Let's get to the first scene, which we get the Isaac's cold open.
Cold is right.
Yeah. In 2018 Seattle, a tank of Fedra agents joke about beating up civilians and taking away their rights. Isaac, the leader of the squad, scolds them and leaves them in the tank while he meets with Hammerhead.
It's
not
a
tank.
It's an armored car.
I don't care.
I do.
The leader of the WLF. Isaac invites the new guy, Burton, to join him, then throws two grenades into it. He gives Burton a choice.
Great introduction for Jeffrey Wright. I thought the setup of the joke, the baldy, you know, guy talking about taking away the voter rights and stuff like that, it was a little too long for me and it was a little too cringy, but whatever. But then seeing our guy Isaac there, and then when he tosses in those grenades, I was like, oh, I know exactly who this motherfucker is. That was a really, really great way to tell us who Isaac is and what he's about.
Cold.
And practical, pragmatic, like, you know?
Yeah.
Why do I? And he tosses him in just like, yeah, boom, boom. You know, he's not dramatic about it. He's not furtive about it. He's just like, oh, toss in a couple grenades.
Right. Yeah. But I do like that he gives Burton a choice, right? He gives Burton this, like, all right, you didn't laugh along with them. You questioned things. Mm-hmm. You got a shot. Make your choice.
Right.
And that was that.
Yeah. And it gives us more insight into Isaac's character as that he's cold blooded, but he's also not unthinking. He's not a, dare I say it, a monster.
Is he not? I mean,
he's a monstrous thing to do. Yeah.
He's pretty monstrous, especially later. Especially
I just had to make the joke, right? I mean, it was just there. So,
I mean, let's contrast it quickly with today. You know, in the present, Isaac tortures a Seraphite or a Scar with a hot copper pan. Love that monologue, by the way, about the pan. He wants to know where the Seraphites are attacking next. When the Scar refuses to tell him, Isaac realizes the futility and kills the cultist.
So, well, can we, just before we get into that, I had one more question about, an open question. I don't know that you can answer this. Mm-hmm. How did they set it up with Isaac and the WLF? That they didn't know each other. They presume each other's names. And then they kind of shake hands. And so I think there's just... I don't know if that's an actual show mystery or if that's just, you know, just take the scene for what it is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure this was set up before.
But he didn't. Like a, yeah, but they didn't know each other. Hanoran.
Not in person, but I think he knew her name.
Obviously they knew each other's names. But yeah, like who and what were the intermediaries? Because that's a pretty drastic action that Isaac takes. And he's taking it on. He has some sort of assurance that this is going to work out.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of a curiosity question as to the backstory of how that deal got done. But anyway, we can move to the Seraphites now.
Yeah, they might flesh that out more. I believe it's fleshed out in like the notes when you go. Okay. It's like in The Last of Us, you just go through the houses when you're looting and there will be a note and you read the note. And it's like a note from Isaac to the Seraphites saying, not the Seraphites, to the WLF saying like, yeah, I think that Fedra's pretty fucked up too. You want to, you know, maybe we can work something out.
Right, right. Well, the Seraphite thing, like you learn that through the dialogue, and I thought it was good, a good way to bring us into the world that there is this ongoing blood feud between the two.
Yeah.
And I really like the way that Isaac runs the litany. He's like, oh, you did this, we did that. You did this, we did that. Okay, fine. And now I don't care about any of that. Tell me where you're going to attack next. That's the only thing I care about.
Right.
Right. He's just pragmatic. He's very, very pragmatic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like when he realizes he's like, I'm not going to get anything out of him. He's like, I'm not going to take pleasure in torturing him. I'm just going to kill him. Like he is a utilitarian.
Yeah. I have to laugh. I had to laugh a little bit too about the cooking story and the sort of the personal thing. There's this, I guess is it a trope of the torturer sharing a relatable human moment so that it contrasts their torturous behavior as opposed to relatable behavior? And I can think of like there's a great Star Trek episode where Picard is being tortured and the guy who's doing it is always talking about his home life and this and that kind of stuff. So I think it's actually a trope of the human relatable torturer. So.
I think that's right. I mean, I like the trope. But I think it's an interesting scene to watch every time. I'm not sick of it.
Right. I do love his line, strange benefits of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Bands. That was a great line.
He's in charge of it. He's like 30 years till retirement. Nope. I'm going to run a militia. Yeah. So cool. So the Seraphites... Yeah. You don't like the Scars nickname? I'm just reading your notes here.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything. There's just something that's not ringing quite right for me. Like I could see it used as a once in a while thing, but there's something, but it's a naming thing. Like
I think it's honestly the wolves trying to like take the power away from them, right? The Seraphites are like,
you're always going to dehumanize your enemy.
Yeah, like those are their like religious names.
Yeah,
that's their prophet given name.
Yeah,
they're like, no, you're just scars. You are the markings you made on yourself. You're not.
Yeah, and I don't disagree that that's an accurate thing, but to me, there's just something that falls a little bit short in the evocativeness. But that's a me thing.
Well, I like it. I'm just going to go on record. Let's take a break, David.
When we get back,
we'll catch up with Ellie and Dina. We're back. Ellie and Dina find the tank Isaac blew up in the cold open, the armored car. David's going to correct me.
It's actually not. No, that the thing that they find is not the thing that.
Okay, so you're saying that that's a tank and the other thing was an armored car.
Correct.
Okay. All right, fine. Ellie and Dina find a tank.
Yes, they do. It looked like an M1 Abrams to me.
Then take shelter in a record store. There, Ellie finds a guitar and plays Take on Me by Aha.
Aha.
At night, they sneak into a WLF building and find multiple wolves hanged and disemboweled by the Seraphites. They realize one of the wolves called for backup and attempt to escape from the searching militia.
We did forget the drugstore search, and
I didn't put the drugstore search. Okay, let's just talk about it now. they stop in a drugstore to search for things. Okay, that's your recap.
That's your recap. But I like, so they didn't show us, like, Dina reacts to something. They intentionally don't show us. And then she very intentionally says, I gotta pee. Mm-hmm. And you're like, huh? And then later you're like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. That all makes sense now. So I thought that they set that up. It was a little clever by half, but it still worked on me. So I was okay. Happy with it. So.
I was going to ask you about that because I knew Dina was pregnant. Sure. And so the minute she said I have to pee in the drugstore, I was like, okay, all right, we're doing a pregnancy test.
Well, I started running through my mind, like, what could she have found? And, you know, and because we had that great scene in season one where Ellie finds some tampons. And, or, you know, some sort of feminine hygiene product, if I could be overt about it. And she makes a big deal about it to Joel, like, hey, man, this is a big deal. And so I think
doesn't Maria give her a Diva cup?
Yes. In the,
that's a whole big thing.
Yeah, that's a thing too. And so I was expecting something along that lines. And then when it was revealed what it was, I was like, ah, well played. Like, yeah. That was a really good, like, finding obscure feminine, you know, products that are made for women where, like, oh, well, why would you take that? Well, yeah, because you're not 50% of the population. That's actually a really important thing that Dina found and a really important thing that Ellie found earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I liked the play. It's sort of the rhyming across the seasons there.
Yeah, and you know, I saw some people talking in the Discord, like, wouldn't that have expired? I'm like, well, yeah, but so would the gas. So you just got to roll with it. Exactly. Like we are just, you know, it's the same thing as like Fallout, right? Like Fallout always has like this like canned food you find, and like that's not going to be good.
Yeah, is that good?
But no, we'll just go with it. We'll go with it.
Well, and then they did play with the idea when she pulls out the like, 8 sticks.
Yeah.
So that was cute. I like that.
That was funny.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I am super pregnant.
I don't know why they brought up the Apollo 1 reference. Like, I get it because she read all that Apollo, you know, our space history stuff in season one, but then, like, I thought it was a pretty morbid joke to talk about the astronauts that burned up on the platform.
Well, I think it's fitting for Ellie, honestly. Okay.
Fair enough.
I can't say much more about that. She likes astronauts.
Okay. What's the comic that they read in that was all about season one? Starlight.
Endure and Survive. I got a Savage Starlight. That's
Savage Starlight. That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. I thought the guitar scene was pretty good. And I was trying to decide, did Bella learn to play actually?
She already knew how to play.
She already knew.
I did actually watch the behind the scenes on this one.
Okay.
They were talking about how Bella already knew how to play, so they just had her play it.
Practice it a little bit more and up to good. But it was beautiful and I really liked Dina's reaction sitting at her feet. And I mean, man, anybody who can, especially in a camping like situation, you know, fire or in the woods or whatever, and somebody busts out a guitar, that's just instant, you know, like, oh, like, sing me a song, please. You know, and you get all goofy. And it was a really fun scene.
Well, now I'm flattered because I was the guitar guy.
Yeah,
at all the campfires. And sometimes people were like, will you quit it? And I'm like, no.
Well, I will say this. When Dina was playing with the drum set, it made me extremely nervous. I think that's like rule number 23 of the zombie apocalypse. Do not play with a drum set.
Well, as she said, Ellie just proved that there's no zombies around because...
It doesn't matter. Drum sets are just bad to play
in the zombie
apocalypse. You just don't do it. Don't do it. I did look at the album covers, of course, and I was like freeze framing the album covers to see what they put there.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a Bob Marley album, and then we had an Andre Previn album, and he is a composer and pianist and, you know, more in the classical genre. And then we had Tears for Fears, The Hurting. And that's a very good album. The power in my house just went out.
Oh, how are you still with me?
I have a UPS.
Oh.
And the power's back. Huzzah. That's good.
I don't know what UPS is.
A universal power supply? It's a battery.
Battery backup system. Wow.
Yeah.
On the internet too, huh?
Yeah, I've got everything, my router, my Synology disks, my disk array thing, you know, the wow. server. And then my, yeah, everything's, all my primary equipment is in the battery backup.
You're prepared for the apocalypse. I'm impressed.
I mean, it's going to run for like all of 5 minutes because I got so much shit plugged into it, but at least it covers for that kind of situation.
I'm leaving this in.
Okay.
I'm leaving this in. David's prepared for the apocalypse.
I do not have a bug out bag and I'm not, I'm a little low on ammo right now. But anyway, the Tears for Fears album, I liked to see that. The Hurting, good album. Actually, one of the songs off the album, Pale Shelter, is on my heavy rotation right now. So, yeah, I was happy to see that.
That's cool. Yeah. Oh, and I, you know, now that you're talking about the music, I wanted to bring up that Take on Me that was in season one. We had that with her and Riley in the mall.
Oh, was that what that song was? Mm-hmm. That I don't remember that. Oh, shit. Okay. I thought it was a different song.
Let's look it up.
Okay. All right. You were right.
Yeah. We checked it. This happened in season one. I don't know why I was doubting myself, but this is when they're going down the escalator in the mall. Ellie's doing Take on Me.
Yeah. And there was another song in there, too. Anyway, there's a lot of good songs. A lot of good music in season one. So, and but
that's super interesting to me because that song they played you know, the first time she hears it, I think, is in that mall with Riley, and that's right before she's bitten for the first time. That's right before her best friend is bitten for the first time.
Oh my God, that's where she
discovers her immunity, and now she plays it for Dina right before she has to prove her immunity.
Can you just throw a big melon at my head, because like I completely missed that. That's a total setup from season one. That's a huge, huge Easter egg right there. Duh. I feel so stupid now.
No, somebody, I couldn't even remember if it happened.
So. All right. Well, that's a good one. That's a really good call. I mean, because it's going from Riley to Dina, right?
Yeah.
She's transferring that, the transference.
It's the mirroring yes, of plot lines, which is
exactly.
Cool.
Oh, that's cool. That was a good catch. I'm glad we paused for a second to look that up.
Yeah.
Cause that's kind of important. So,
you want to talk about the subway?
I just want to call out. I just want to call out that Aha. Have you ever seen the music video for that?
No.
This was Aha's one big. They had a couple other songs, but this was really their big one. And the music video won like 6 MTV awards or something like that. It was
back when MTV played music.
Yes, back when MTV played music. I would really recommend you at least take a look at it, because the animation of the music video is very cool. It's this hand-drawn charcoal sketch thing. It's this girl in a cafe, and she's drawing, and she draws this hot dude, and then he reaches out her hand and pulls her in, and then they have this whole adventure where they're being chased by bad guys and all this kind of stuff, and then she pops out, and then he pops out, and oh, then it's like they're in love, and you know.
I don't even need to watch it now.
No, but you have to watch it just for the animation. You got to watch it for the animation. And it was like one of the most expensive music videos ever produced or something. It was like stupid. It like blew out their budgets, but they won a bunch of awards for it. And then Aha kind of just disappeared. So
they got their money and they left.
Yeah, that's right.
That's back when you used to make money for recording songs.
That's right.
Now you have to tour.
That's right. Yeah, the escape scene in the subway, that was tense.
Yeah.
Are we there? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that alongside the we kind of already talked about the wolves being strung up, and you know, them narrowly escaping. Dina, of course, kills the first wolf.
Yes, yep. I do want to say that the fight scene with Ellie and the guy, they've been sort of building up the whole season so far of Ellie and her sort of hand-to-hand grappling skills. Yep. And so here we go. You know, she got to spring on like a spider from behind.
She did a good job.
And then she straight up stabbed that dude. She like right in the neck. I was like, oh man. So I was thinking about this while they were being hunted in the big room.
Well,
could you give yourselves up as drifters? Like, hey, we're just drifters. No. We stumbled in here.
I don't think so. I mean, look. If you walked in and a bunch of your friends were strung up dead, and these two random people you don't know are like, we're innocent, you'd be like, all right, come on.
Yeah, but they know that it's the Seraphites, and they're definitely not Seraphites because they're not Scars, right?
So, I agree with you, and I had a similar thought about the Scars, but I don't know. I also
even if they got caught.
you're also, your only interaction with these people are them killing someone you love. I don't know if you would trust them to have like a judicial system.
If you got cornered and you had to give up, right, and they got the drop on you or something like that, any chance of explaining yourself away is now gone. Like you've killed two of their dudes.
A lot of them got killed in the in the zombie attack.
Sure, that's true. That's true as well. Now you maybe have some cover because there's a lot of people dead, not just those people.
Yeah. So. Oh boy. I loved the scene running through the subway. I mean, I thought that was so well done.
Do you want to read your setup for it? Or did you already read
it? Oh, I didn't read it. Oh, my God. Why am I just jumping ahead of myself? Ellie
We're on
and
a speedrun podcast tonight. That's what's going on.
I know. Ellie and Dina crawl through the subway station, but the wolves follow them through other entrances. When the wolves throw flares, they awaken infected through the fungal network, leading the wolves to be attacked. Ellie and Dina escape through the subway car, but just as they go through the turnstile, Dina is almost bitten by an infected. Ellie puts her arm in Dina's place, leading Dina to believe she must kill Ellie.
I loved the setup with the flares and the little fungal tendrils.
Yeah, just burning them at the edges. That was
cool. And then you saw the one like wavering, and then I was like, uh-oh. Like, that was really good buildup for the tension. So
Yeah.
This whole scene had me on edge. I mean, going from the stage area that they were in, to this, I was tense the whole time. I was on edge because I didn't know nobody. It's not that nobody is, you know, the question of plot armor and what they're going to do. Okay, fine. I may think that Ellie and Dina are going to get through because they're main characters, right? You just killed Joel. Can you actually kill either one of those two? That's not the point. The point is, what are they going to have to do to survive? And that's what this show does really well. Is stress you out as to how do they actually run this gauntlet? How do they actually get through? How do they get past David in season one? You know, like all of this stuff. It's very terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, like you pointed out about plot armor, like, I don't know. I would have said that they wouldn't have killed Joel when I first put up part two.
Right.
Like, I don't know who has plot armor in this game. When I boot up part three, I don't know who they're going to kill at the beginning. Like, who knows?
Exactly. I loved all of the structural mechanics of the action, like the soft middle parts between the subway cars.
Yeah.
The breaking of the bottom of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And then those effing turnstiles, man. I hate that style of turnstile.
I know. Just get the one that are just like you can just push through quick. The one bar one.
And then the way that the zombies get stuck in the turnstile by like one of their own getting jammed in there. Like that's my fear of getting stuck in a turnstile like that. So it was like perfect.
Oh my God. Well, that's a good fear to have. I didn't have it before and I do now. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
I'm going to New York City this week. I don't know why you needed to do that to me, but...
Just hop the turnstiles. Don't go through the stupid roundabout.
Did you see they made anti-jump turnstiles?
Oh, of course they
figured them out in like a day.
Yeah, of course they did. Of course they did.
They like put spikes on where people usually hold, so people just put their hands on the readers, and then they were just over in like a second. And people they spent like $15 million or something like that. Like it was some absurd amount. I don't know if it was $15 million or something else, but some absurd amount on this. And the people jumping were just like. I could jump
whatever.
Back, so.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anyway, let's talk about the bite, the sacrificial bite.
Yeah,
I was so tense about that turnstile, and then when she threw her arm out there, I was like, "Oh, this is great! This is great drama! This is great setup for what the hell is the?" Because Dina saw it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make any bones about the fact that Dina saw it.
Right. It's in front of her face.
And so you go from escaping from the wolves to escaping from through the subways and the clickers. And then now you have this tense situation between Dina and Ellie. This whole part of the episode was just like bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
It was really great from one tense moment to the next. And it really tells me a lot about Ellie, that she's, you know, and how she feels about Dina, that she could take the bite, because she knows that she's going to have to explain, her and Dina are going to have to figure that out afterwards, because Dina saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But, all right, this is one of my critiques of the episode, is actually that Ellie is way too cavalier about mm-hmm. it afterward, in a way that I don't think makes sense based on what we've been told.
Okay.
Not that she wouldn't, like, if she got written in private and she was cavalier, I think that's perfectly normal.
Okay.
But she has been trained and trained herself to be extremely secretive about her immunity, to the point where she, because she knows people will see her very differently, to the point where she'll literally burn her arm and get tattoos to hide it.
Right.
And I just don't buy that she wouldn't be like, Dina, while we're walking here, I'm immune. Please don't shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, she's just like, oh, I don't know. Oh, this is what you're worried about. Too much. I know that they were trying to do the cavalier thing about Ellie's personality, too cool for school.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't think that's totally an accurate portrayal of Ellie. But second, I don't buy it. I do not buy it based on what you've told me about this character and the situation she's been living.
Right. Okay.
So I thought that was a weak point of the writing.
I did like the acting and the tenseness between them.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it was on Dina's end, though, right? Like, I don't think that that was happening on the Ellie end, I'll be honest with you.
But Ellie was worried about getting shot by her best friend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the setup that I really enjoyed, was watching them work it out. And what do you say? And how do you talk your friend down? Because Dina could shoot at any second as a mercy killing, so that... Ellie's really tense, like, oh God, like, what is she gonna, she can shoot me at any moment. So yeah. I enjoyed that tension between them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. I don't know if I totally love the scene.
My critique about the bite scene is that it doesn't engender any intense conversation. Oh my God, you're immune? What's that about? Tell me about it. Like, what's going on? Dina never really asks her about it. She asks about the scar, but not about the condition of being immune.
Right.
And that's what confuses me.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the lack of follow-up and the fact that, like, immunity plus pregnant equals sex. Like, I don't know. Like, I understand, like, I actually do understand, like, you know, intense emotions, they just survive something. Maybe that the answer is, you know, we need to get some physical energy out of here. But,
and we're alive, yeah. And let's live in our aliveness.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, so I get it to a point. But then, like, morning after when you're chatting, maybe we have a little further of a conversation.
Yeah, and the pregnancy conversation occupies more of their time than, hey, why are you immune? What does that mean? What's going on with that? You know, I think that would be in my mind, that was a bigger deal.
Yeah. I'll play. I hate saying playing devil's advocate.
Okay.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
You can steel man the argument. That's better.
Steel man the argument. Just to say, like, I don't think Ellie wants to talk about being immune. I don't think she actually wants to talk about it. I think there's a lot of residual trauma from it with the Fireflies and with Riley. And I just don't, I think she's directing the conversation to be about Dina's pregnancy. I did love I'm going to be a dad. That did make me laugh a lot. All right. So let's go right into the last scene, because David's power has gone out again and we might lose some soon, and I might have to finish the podcast by myself.
It's very eerie because I'm only lit by the light of my laptop screen. Looks really funny in the playback. Click, click, click. I love the way Dina holds up her fingers as she's counting off the number of clickers that she hears.
Yeah.
She's a badass. She's a certified badass. I'm really falling for Dina personally.
Dora really grew up.
Yes,
she did. All right. So Ellie and Dina run into the abandoned theater, where Dina pulls a gun on Ellie. Ellie explains that she's immune and offers to sleep in a chair with Dina watching her all night. She awakens unchanged, and Dina tearfully confesses she's pregnant. The two get it on, and in the morning come clean about their feelings.
Let's get it on.
Overhear a radio transmission that suggests Abby might be at Lake Hill Hospital. They decide to go there and find her. So, your thoughts on the scene before you leave?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. There is no Lake Hill Hospital. I don't know where they're pointing to. The geography bugged me on this, but whatever. And we talked about it at the top of the episode. It was just sort of wooden as they're standing there. And it was a really weird, maybe that's what it was the wild swing going from tense life and death stuff to, yeah, hey, we're happy and I'm going to be a dad and it's all cool and hunky dory. So I don't know. It seemed a little incongruous to me. I did love the morning jerky breath thing. I thought that was hilarious.
That was pretty funny. Like, is that better?
It's gotta be.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. So we're going to Lake Hill Hospital next season, mm-hmm. next episode rather.
Yep.
Very exciting stuff. We already see some stuff going on the horizon.
They're having a fight.
I really do like, I see complaints about this episode. I have some complaints about this episode, but something I really like is that Dina and Ellie go there for simple revenge mm-hmm. against a small group of people and they stumble onto a turf war.
Yeah, that is.
And that's so interesting because life happens all at once, right? And I think that that's realistic as like, they're not going to find a simple situation. These people had lives in Seattle before them and they'll have lives in Seattle after them.
Exactly.
So what do you do when you stumble onto this crazy turf war?
In from like a role-playing world game standpoint, there's this idea of, well, we're going to go into this room and we're going to lock ourselves in and we're going to take our long rest and recharge all of our powers. And then we're going to come out and the same set of bad guys are going to be there. And then we're just going to beat them up and carry on. No, that's not what happens. Right. You know, they bring reinforcements. The big bad comes down the hallway from the other chamber.
Right.
I love the fact that there is like you said, there's the rest of the world carries on no matter what protagonists are doing. The rest of the world is moving on. And so, yeah, stumbling into this turf war is like, oh my God, what is this that's going on?
Right, right. It's great world building, a great twist, I think.
Yeah.
To this whole thing. Like, that's what makes The Last of Us interesting is these unique situations that people just stumble into.
And the way that they set, again, we talked about it before, but the way that they set up the Seraphites as, oh, but we're just peacefully walking through the forest and we're trying to get away from war and mm-hmm. save our children. Like, nah. If they're going toe to toe with the WLF who have armored cars and automatic weapons,
yeah,
you know, and there's explosions going off all the place and they broke through. How many more Seraphites are there than there are WLF people?
It's a good question. It's a good question. Well, we know that they're recruiting. They say, you know, every day you lose somebody.
One by one.
And we don't ever lose any of ours.
Right.
That's a fascinating thing for Isaac, right?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we do feedback quick while we still have you?
Catch me. Yeah. Keep us as long as we can go. I know the beeping in the background of my battery is going in.
We're trying.
Carry on.
All right. Katie says, hi, John and David. Greetings from New Zealand. Hi, Katie. Love the show. Really interesting takes from you both. I enjoy the generational debates. Last of Us clearly serving up a lot of character tension and hitting current sore spots for all of us, infected zombies aside. Regarding the convo on Seth apologizing, here we go again, David. So interesting to hear your differing opinions and then your reflections after getting feedback. One POV I was surprised was not brought up as not so deep as the ethical debate of if one should forgive or not. It's that the conflict between Seth and Ellie is a foreshadowing of Ellie's block on forgiving. Seth is a reflection of her fixation to get revenge on Abby. I think that's right. You know, this idea that Ellie is so hyper fixated on revenge, she can't let go of a grudge.
Okay. Interesting. Yep.
It's simply a great storytelling tool to show where Ellie is with her capacity to forgive, wherever she gets to do that with that. I'm going to assume it will be more acceptance of cause and effect and recognition of the pointlessness of continuing to put energy into something or someone who does not appreciate it. Well, that's very hopeful of you, Katie.
Interesting. Keep going, Katie. Because
forgiveness of oneself, or at least acceptance of two people having conflict but letting it go, is the only way to break free of harmful patterns. But you can't force that in yourself, and it doesn't always come. Sometimes walking away is enough. It's giving Rick from the White Lotus Season 3 origin story.
Well done, Katie. Well done. You are a lore hound. You're mixing your story worlds. Perfect.
Will Ellie allow this fixation on revenge to define her or define her life or transcend it?
Oh, this is a perfect comp. I love this.
It's great. Yeah.
I love it.
Also, regarding Dina, she's no narcissist. She has so much empathy and validates people's emotions.
I put it in quotes.
She's just a 19-year-old chick. We can all be a little manipulative, especially when we're young. You really
tripped me up when you called, because I wasn't going to actually say the word narcissist.
Listen, David, you can't write things in the notes and expect me not to bring them up. You put your notes in at your own risk.
I've learned my lesson.
I feel like this age aspect is forgotten about often when people judge Ellie and other young characters in shows. They are young and immature. That's pretty standard.
Good point.
Good to reflect on characters as a way to discern right from wrong. But maybe it says more about us in how we expect young people to act, how mature we expect ourselves to act in their situation. But the truth is, we'd probably act pretty similarly if we were wronged in the same way, unless we had really grown through a higher level of maturity.
That's a good point of view. I appreciate that reflection, because we're looking at it from our age, our life experience, you know, where we have gotten to in our life. And it's not easy to remember how you were, the state of your being at that time. You have your memories. But yeah, I don't remember how stupid I was and sort of emotionally obtuse that I was. I remember doing stupid things, but I don't think about myself as, you know, young and dumb at that age, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So now I hear you. Katie finishes, these stories are about growth, and there wouldn't be any if the characters were not flawed with places to go to begin with. Anyway, my thoughts, keep up the good work. Also been loving the Wheel of Time series. Fingers crossed we get a season 4, Katie. I agree, Katie. Give us Wheel of Time season 4. Renew it.
Katie, thank you so much. Yeah. Great. Greetings from New Zealand. Thank you for writing in from down under. We're global, John. We have global reach.
That's right. Lorehounds worldwide.
That's right. Katie, write in again. That was really good insights. I really appreciated your take that you synthesized a lot of great stuff there. So thank you.
Agreed. Now, not to rush you out of here, David, but I don't want to lose your file. So I'm going to send you home and then I'll do the show notes after you leave.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. Bye, everybody. See you next week.
David's power turned off just as we were uploading the files, but I got them just in time. So let's talk about what's going on the network. Go check out all of our network affiliates. Radioactive Ramblings, they just did a Fallout lore episode. Never mind the music. They are always talking about the intersection between psychology and music. Wool Shift Dust, they have some stuff coming on Dune. That's Alicia's other podcast. And she also has a Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast to fill you in on some of that earlier timeline stuff if you're interested in Andor. And of course, check out Properly Howard Movie Review and Rings and Rituals, which will both be back soon. So subscribe. Everything's in the link tree. On the network, we're doing this full time. We're doing Andor. We're covering every single episode by splitting them up between the three of us, me, David, and Alicia. We're having a lot of fun with it. It's been such a good season, and I'm really enjoying doing the first episode of every week. I get to set everybody up for the week, and it's been nice and exciting. This week, I think I'm going to be with Jean again, just because we have to do some scheduling changes. So we're going to repeat co-host a little bit more than originally planned, but I get to talk with John more, so that's a plus. Anyway, everywhere else on the network, you can get Doctor Who coverage. You can get, I think we're going to do Murderbot. We're talking about that. So plenty of other stuff. Silmarillion Stories, there was an episode recently. Go check out the network. There's plenty of stuff to get in the link tree. Quick thank yous are Discord server boosters, Aaron K, Taylor the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doove71, Athena A, Tina Listu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard. I also want to thank Aaron for making our show art for this. Thank you so much, Aaron, for host of Radioactive Ramblings, for making the show art for The Last of Us and for Andor this season. And our Lore Masters are top tier Patreon Supercast subscribers. They are Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, and Adrian. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week, hopefully a little smoother without some power issues, but I think we had a great conversation either way. We'll see you then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.